never did have nothing. I got nothing much to lose. Never did have nothing. I got nothing much to lose. Got a low down feeling. Truck driver.
All right, welcome to KZFR, Fall Pledge Drive edition of the Without a Roof radio program, which is now airing weekly in the 5 to 5:30 p.m. slot. We have callers waiting for your pledge at 895-0131. I'm also blessed. I'm going to just turn the mic on real fast to introduce Carl Ori, who's in the studio. We're going to have him in our little second segment. But I was just saying to Carl, who's going to introduce himself briefly, that you were mayor of the city of Chico before we had this wonderful public radio station. Were you not?
It was the last century, mid-last century, that I was last mayor, 1983.
Wonderful to have you, Carl, and you're running for re-election. You're running for, it seems like re-election, right? It's been a long time in between on the November 8th ballot, so welcome to the studio. But I want to make sure that everyone knows it's just tuning in that you are indeed listening to FM 90.1, KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. And the opinions voiced in this program do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, volunteers, board of directors, or possibly even the underwriters. Got a packed show. I got some really cool announcements. Senior Felipe from LA Sounds, Phil Elkins, a long-running and beloved KZFR programmer, is telling his Vietnam-era veteran story tonight at PAC 134 at 7:30 p.m. Phil's playing some songs, man. He's going to be reading out of his book. He's going to be playing some songs that he put together. It's going to be really tight. So get on down there to PAC 134 on CSU campus. Also want to make a quick shout-out to North Valley Stand Down starts tomorrow. Bus rides will be all set up at the Oroville. It starts in Oroville, traveling north, gets here in Chico about 8:30 or so, but that's at the fairgrounds in Redding, California, North Valley Stand Down. Without a Roof will be in the house for that one for sure. Another quick promo is I had a magnificent wee hours conversation with John Linton from I Have a Name. He's got like 50,000 likes on his Facebook page, known throughout the nation for some of the work he does working with homelessness and raising compassion. But I was talking to him regarding a project of his that Without a Roof will be collaborating on that we may quite possibly include a local visit. So there's a tickler on that. Now, what we got coming up here real quick, next up is a short summary around comments that Giovanni Treseri. Giovanni Treseri is running first time for city council. Giovanni works for North Valley Community Foundation. But he made some comments at a Chico City Candidates Forum back in September that I really think need some clarification. And I have a statement from Giovanni that I'm physically going to read. But here's the comments, and then we'll just kind of delve into this. But he had said, this is his words, money spent on housing subsidies far outweighs how much is being directed towards public safety. While housing is important, people can get housing if they want it. Giovanni Treseri from a Chico City Council candidate forum in September. I'd done a Facebook post hoping to get some feedback, and I did. I mean, we got a letter we're going to read on the air, but I put perhaps the most off-the-mark and dangerous comment I've read this local election cycle. In essence, Treseri's comment translates into housing people is making Chico less safe, and the money going towards housing is unnecessary. Both of these concepts are patently absurd and deeply disappointing. I'm hoping that this is a misquote or a fumbling for words. So what I'm going to pull up right now, I'm using one hand on my mobile device, was a statement that Giovanni Treseri had just sent me like 30 minutes ago, live on the radio here. And here's what he puts. At the Chico City Council Candidate Forum hosted beginning of September, I misspoke on the issue of housing and homelessness. My intention was to highlight the compassion embedded in our community's DNA. If you want help in Chico, we have a compassionate community ready to help. I realize our housing resources are insufficient. Housing inventory is extremely low. Behavioral health and mental health resources need better support, and we could use more resources to address substance abuse. But it's not a lack of compassion. It will take a broad coalition of public and private partnerships among a diverse community to address the real issues that cause homelessness. I firmly believe that our community works best when everyone participates in their own way to its success. We need leaders who are bridge builders to be effective. We need conservatives and progressives working alongside each other to bring real and sustainable impact. We need leaders who collaborate bipartisanship and focused on the common good, no matter the results of the election. and it's bouncing around a little bit, guys. I'm sorry. I'm committed to working with you and our broader community and addressing these critical issues facing those struggling in poverty and homelessness. Now, I had Trevani on, as luck would have it, on a well listened to. I've gotten a lot of feedback on it, but I have a clip, actually, that the 22:16 mark of that clip, Giovanni Treseri talks about the numbers that he'd came up with in regards to housing. But I had asked him a question: is it possible that we are focusing too much on hiring police officers to the detriment of these other things that make Chico such a wonderful place to live? So, in essence, you know, some of the comments that he had around that related to $500 million. He came up with a number of $500 million, and I had to do some pause and call Ed Merritt, the housing authority, to, you know, make sure that I understood that, as Ed had just told me 30 minutes ago, the housing authority of Butte County, the one that provides the bulk of you know, quote unquote public assistance housing, they have like a $12 million budget. But, you know, since we're going to be doing this session here on criminalization of homelessness, I would just take the time to pause and push back a little bit on the compassionate community. As you'll hear from Paul Bowden and our guest here in the studio, we have some of the most draconian laws on the books that target people simply because they're experiencing homelessness. And I'd like to see everyone listen up to the experts that came through, because both Lloyd Pendleton and Robert Marbit were really strong that these quote-unquote criminalization ordinances have no place and they do not help homeless people. So I'm hoping that they're going to, you know, take that for what it's worth. And the last thing I'll say before I transition is Lloyd Pendleton did such a wonderful job, you know, and I have to really say that this whole conversation was around, you know, who needs money more, police or housing. And I don't think that's fair. That's kind of divisive. And I thought Lloyd Pendleton did a wonderful job of teeing that up here in Chico. But at Orville, he actually stood next to the sheriff of Butte County and made this quote. He says, "When you house the homeless, you help the police." And he handed the mic over to the sheriff, and he just carried it from there. So, you know, these police officers are doing the very best they can. They're wonderful individuals, just like all of our listeners. And it's a rough and it's a tough job. And a lot of these police officers would much rather have, you know, a safe and humane place to send folks other than jail or to the county jail. But I want to do land on this quote. I posted this on my Facebook page, and I think it's really important for People Powered Radio here in our pledge drive, that journalism is printing what someone else does not want printed. Everything else is public relations. So this was something that was in public space, and I really feel that it was very, very important for us to get some clarity around that. So no further ado, I'm going to start flipping on these mics here. That's what I love about public radio. You do everything but get your own coffee, and that's because we don't have a coffee maker. But I have Tammy Ritter. Maybe you can introduce yourself real quick, and I'm going to drop Paul Bowden on the call here.
Thanks, Bill. I'm really happy to be here. I'm Tammy Ritter. I'm a current city council member for the city of Chico, and I am also an incumbent. I'm running again for another term on city council, and I'm really excited to be running with other individuals who have the same values that I do around housing.
Awesome. Thank you so much for that, Tammy. And joining us from hopefully Mission District in San Francisco is Paul Bowden. You on the line?
Yeah, hi, I'm here.
Awesome, Paul Bowden. Glad to hear you. And sorry, I'm gonna bump your sound up a little bit, man. Can you guys hear him on the mics? Awesome.
Can you?
There you go, Paul. You're a little bit better. You're a little bit better there right now. So, you know, what I wanted to do, I literally, Paul Bowden, but just a quick introduction. Paul Bowden is someone I've known from afar and near. I was actually in his office down in the Bay Area the last week of June and into July. But he's done a tremendous amount of work around policy, around criminalization. And he's going to help lead some discussion around the criminalization laws and maybe kind of tailor it to the national scene. And then some of the issues that we face here in Chico. So I'm going to turn it over to Paul Bowden from San Francisco.
Yeah, and I didn't realize that was you that broke into our office, so now I know. For letting me know. I've been working in homeless issues. I was homeless as a kid since 1983, and over the past 10 years, we have really joined a bunch of organizations from throughout the West Coast, primarily Colorado, Oregon, and California, in examining just what happened prior to 1982 when we started opening our shelters again and having massive numbers of people sleeping out in our streets again, and again being since the Great Depression era. What happened right before that that created that situation? And you very clearly, very well documented, indisputable, you see the equivalent of roughly $50 billion a year using 2004 constant dollars in affordable housing funding cuts. And when that money was eliminated under Reagan, it has never, ever, ever come back. And what local governments have done in response to these massive numbers of people and the over 800,000 units of affordable housing that have been lost over the last 30 years because of those massive cuts, what local governments have done is criminalize the presence of those people that have ended up out in the streets, in the parks, down by the waterways, under the by the freeway overpasses or under the freeway overpasses. You know, the very people that clearly were not in a political position to make the cuts or to vote on those cuts or to make the decision to triple home ownership mortgage interest deduction funding and housing subsidies while eliminating, basically eliminating affordable housing subsidies, the very people that had no political clout to be in a position to make those decisions are the ones that are now going to jail because those decisions were made.
You know what I think would be an awesome opportunity? I feel blessed. I walked into Chico the day after the November 12th election, and we're really blessed to have Tammy Ritter here, who's been a strong, unwavering voice for the morality of folks experiencing homelessness. And Tammy, as I think about it right now, literally here, you've been here for all of the major fights and battles, wins and losses around criminalization, sit and lie, and the public ordinance against public waterways ordinance. Maybe you could give us a wrap on what those ordinances are and what your thoughts are.
Sure. So I've been involved with homeless services since 1997 in Chico, starting out at Catalyst, a domestic violence shelter. And what we found then was that we had really insufficient services to meet the need in the community. In 2000, I became the executive director of the Torres Community Shelter, and we battled then. We had a difficult time, a lot of NIMBYism. We lost some properties because people didn't want, you know, those people in their backyards. And we finally ended up in a commercial services district for the construction of the shelter. It's with this most recent council, starting in 2014, that we've actually seen legislation where the prevailing sentiment on council seems to be that we can somehow legislate away poverty. We can make laws that are so arcane that we are going to say it's illegal to be homeless here. So we have a sit-lie ordinance where people are not allowed to sit and rest on the sidewalks. And then we have this, quote, protection of our waterways ordinance that does nothing to actually protect our waterways. It's kind of couched as an environmental ordinance.
Yeah, who could be against clean waterways?
Exactly. We all want to protect our waterways. So, you know, basically it's taking things that would previously be citations and it's turning them into misdemeanors. It's increasing, you know, if you receive one of these cites from the police department, now you're going to have increased fees. You're going to have greater barriers to actually changing your situation and getting off the street. People don't have transportation. They can't get to the courthouse. They eventually end up with bench warrants, and their spiral just goes deeper and deeper, that they have no resources and no way to really get out of this kind of hole we're helping them to dig.
Yeah, like ad nausea. Just a quick clarification, the sit and lie was 2013.
Right.
So that was, you know, so 14 was the public waterways. So it kind of spanned both of the elections. Carl, you got anything to add to that, Carl?
Well, I'm delighted to be here with Tammy, who's had a great local history in these issues. I couldn't imagine somebody with better experience. My housing experience has been more nationwide and more focused on rural housing. So I have a lot to learn, but I'm sorry. But I have the background, so I'm really interested in this conversation.
You're on the air, Carl. Don't worry. We're hearing you. Tammy can't, so it's fortunate she's sitting right next to you.
These guys are making funny faces at me. I'll see if they can distract the old guy.
Yeah, it's working. Sorry, Carl. Continue. Y'all done? Awesome. So, Paul, I know you and I talk on a fair amount. Maybe you could add some color to you know, what the ordinances look like here in Chico compared to, you know, other localities throughout the state of California.
Well, I mean, that's the sad fact. They look identical. You know, we looked at 82 communities in California, we being the Berkeley Law School. But, you know, looking at 82 communities, there were over 1,065 separate restrictions specifically targeted towards acts like sleeping, sitting, laying down, standing still, sharing food. You know, just looking at these specific activities that even the people that write the bills, even the cops that enforce the legislation, like, we're all going to stand still at some point. We're all going to sit down at some point. We're all going to sleep at some point, and we're all going to eat at some point. That's why with the Right to Rest Act and that whole campaign that we're working on in our states, you know, is very limited to these activities that have a historical basis of being used as part of Jim Crow and anti-Oki laws and ugly laws and Bassereiro treaties and Japanese American Exclusion Act. The Bassereiro treaty law was actually called Operation Wetback under President Eisenhower. But this country has a long history of local governments using these laws that they have the power through time, place, and manner restrictions to write and pass and then enforce, and using them in incredibly discriminatory fashion, whether it's Japanese American, whether it's Mexican and South American people, whether it's LGBT, whether it's day laborers, whether it's homeless people. Lord knows it's been African American people more than once. You know, very discriminatory enforcement. But you have, like in these 82 cities, you have on average 12 in each city, over 1,000 laws that are on the books that as soon as somebody we don't want to see stops walking, we can criminalize their presence.
Part of the big issue that I see too is the whole framing of the issue, because Lloyd Pendleton, once again, he's Utah's law that has helped to reduce chronic homelessness by over 90%. He basically had a point that how the community perceives homelessness will directly impact the community's response. So if you're going to be treating them like criminals, the response from the community is not going to be nearly as robust or as compassionate as it should be. What would our audience guess?
Although I don't think that government has a right to say, oh, well, these people are perceived negatively, so therefore we don't need to have the same protection.
Right, but telling people to perceive them negatively,
exactly,
we can hardly change that. When we're saying that every service we bring into town is somehow going to attract more of the same, and it's going to become a magnet for, quote, these kinds of people, then our government plays a big role in, you know, really just starting propaganda and telling the constituency, this is a problem and you need to be afraid of these people and you need to do something about this because this is where our crime originates. That's really the rhetoric that we're hearing here in Chico from the parts of our government that are promoting these kinds of policies.
And very often the local government officials are the ones that are putting together campaigns. In San Francisco, there's a ballot initiative for at least the 18th time in the period of time I've been here. You know, the ballot initiative being pushed by local politicians to make it illegal to have a tent. And they're calling it housing, not tents. But there's no housing component to the bill at all. But if it passes, there'll be a special force within the police department, which to me is where local government, you're absolutely right, you know, that they play an active role in perpetuating the myth that poor people and people of color and disabled people and victims of domestic violence are somehow dangerous and shouldn't be around us, because we're going to set up a special unit within the police department to make sure that they can't touch you. And to promote through media, through paid advertisements, there's no truth in advertising laws when it comes to political campaigns, and to promote this image that these people, them, are here by choice, they're dangerous, they're urine, feces, hypodermic needles, There are all these horrible things that we don't want in our communities, and we, the police department, are going to protect you by getting rid of them. That's Jim Crow. That's sundown town.
Let's pivot on that real quick, Paul, because I actually had some meetings with conservatives yesterday, and I pushed back big time because I keep hearing all this defecation. Oh, there's needles in certain parks, and I'm really taking an outside-the-box look, just looking at this objectively, going, well, that's a city problem. If they know they have an issue, it's the city's job to deal with it. It's not the city's job to segment these people going, we just should get rid of them, then that way we don't have the problem. So they're basically set up the problem as a way to kind of focus on the individuals and not the specific problems that city budgets are well capable of handling. What would you say to that, Carl?
You know, it does seem to me that we don't focus on the greater issue of homelessness when we do that. I don't remember the count, but I think on any given night we might have 1,000 people that we consider
that,
homeless.
Yeah.
And, you know, you were ignoring the 16-year-old who's trying to struggle through sleeping on the floors of friends. You know, we seem, I think, sweep the bigger problem under the carpet when we just focus on what we consider criminal acts.
Amen to that. I call it the tip of the iceberg. I mean, you're just seeing the very tip of the iceberg, you know, for people that are experiencing homelessness or at risk for homelessness.
But what they also label us a danger, but when you actually get a law school like Berkeley to do the research and to look at the numbers that are reported to the federal government to the Department of Justice, you know, this between 2000 and 2014, when a bunch of these laws have been passed and have started being enforced, the arrests for disorderly conduct have gone down 63%. The arrests for vagrancy have gone up 133%. People are being arrested and going to jail because they're poor and they're homeless, because they're domestic violence victims who no longer fit within the HUD category of who's a homeless family, because they're youth that no longer fit and no longer have access to affordable housing, because they're poor people that no longer have ability. The 20-year waiting list for affordable housing programs, you know, you're going to be in the street. You lose 800,000, close to 900,000 affordable housing units. Those units weren't empty. The people that were living in those units are going to be in the street. And clearly, we have decided, rather than address the cause of massive contemporary homelessness, we're going to address the impact of it by getting rid of and making disappear the people that are suffering the consequences of these decisions that were made.
I'd like to speak a little bit to Lloyd Pendleton's quote. Once again, I said Robert Marbit came through, and they were both consistent in that manner. Robert Marbit said he doesn't believe in panhandling, but he doesn't believe in laws to deal with it. So both of these quote-unquote experts have come through town and saying criminalization absolutely does not work. And Carl, I just really appreciate your comment on you know, the whole, what I paraphrase is the tip of the iceberg, because there's just so many people out here that are stigmatized by visible homelessness. But that aside, I mean, I'd like to get some dialogue around housing the homeless helps the police. I know back when Stairways was going, you know, at full gangbusters after that latest ordinance, the police were actually bringing, you know, people over there. Sure, I heard from reliable sources the police actually had it within their budget. And I talked to a couple of, you know, the people that work with the officers, and they were very, very happy to have some place they could bring folks instead of bringing them to jail. What would you guys say to that?
Well, they can't keep them in jail, so that's the first piece. You know, we're not going to get a population in Chico who are going to intentionally be breaking laws so that they can get shelter for the winter. We used to have that back in the early 2000s. We had some people who consistently did that. We can't do that now. People know they're not going to be held. The officers know they're not going to be held. So that isn't a solution. I think that we need harm reduction. We need housing first. We need low barrier shelters. We need all of the services that we currently have, but we need them about times 10. And until we have the political will and the commitment from our local government that this is important, we aren't going to see any change. Kind of coupled with that is, this is not just a city of Chico problem. This is a problem that is throughout our county. And until we coordinate with Butte County, I don't see much improvement happening. A lot of the stuff we're talking about are public health crisis. When we talk about finding needles in parks, we don't have a needle exchange in Butte County. Why don't we have a needle exchange? Because it's going to encourage intravenous drug users to use them more. That's ridiculous.
Or safe drops too.
Yeah, right. So there's all of these services. You know, last night at the council meeting, we had someone speak from the floor, Dan Everhart, saying, when are we going to declare a shelter crisis? When are we going to say that we as a community are no longer going to stand for this, that it is not acceptable for any individual to be sleeping out in inclement weather, you know, that impacting not just them, but also the emergency services in our community?
This is Pledge Drive Show, and I want to make sure that we get our little shout-out to the underwriters. Without a Roof Radio program is made possible by the generous contributors, KZFR supporters, and by locally owned Broadway Heights, serving California cuisine, overlooking downtown Chico on the corner of 3rd and Broadway. Go to Best in Chico. Broadway Heights serves award-winning appetizers, salads, focaccia sandwiches, pizza, dinner entrees, desserts, beer and wine, and happy hours from 3:30 to 5:30 with drink and pizza specials. Open every day at 11 a.m. upstairs at 300 Broadway. Broadway Heights also has a private room for parties, bridal showers, groups, and business meetings. Hey, guys, I hate to do this to you, but we got 1 minute. 1 minute wrap-up, starting with you, Paul.
Nothing ends homelessness like a home.
Boom.
So if you can afford $144 billion for homeowners' housing subsidies, we can do a hell of a lot better than $34 billion for poor people.
Amen, Paul. Great ending there, man. Carl?
Well, I think you started, Paul, by mentioning the lack of funding on national and statewide, and that's an area that I think we need to push back on. There is funds coming up. There's cap-and-trade funds in the state that can be targeted for housing. There's some innovative programs that I wish we had time to hear Paul and
others
comment.
Yeah, I'll be back on, Carl. Yeah.
Well, I meant Paul.
You too, because you work with housing here in the rural. Yeah.
Okay. And federally, we're having a housing trust fund where the Fannie Mae's and those folks are now having to put their profits into a housing trust fund. So I'm hopeful in the next 4 years the governor might change his mind about housing and start funding some programs.
Yeah, I understand he just signed a $2 billion bill. I haven't really had a chance to delve into it. But
I think it was to rehab his mansion.
To rehab his mansion. I love your humor, Paul. Straight on, man. Tammy, real quick, and then we're going to do a quick captain. We have Captain Steve. He doesn't have his captain hat on, but he's a captain nevertheless. Going to do a rundown on our pledge drive.
We just need to be coming from a much more compassionate place and stop judging people who are in positions that we could very easily be in ourselves.
I really appreciate both you folks. I know you're heading off to your next event, so thanks for coming in and being on the show. And as always, Paul Bowden, it's a pleasure, man.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Hey, no worries, man. Bye.
Bye.
Steve, Captain. Captain Steve, man, what do we got? We got you on mic one. How are we doing on the pledge, man?
We're doing well. We're very close to our goal for the first day of the pledge drive. Not doing as well with this show as we had hoped. So this is a great new show, Without a Roof, with Bill Mash, looking at really significant issues, merits support. So I hope in the next few minutes people will call in and pledge support to show support for Without a Roof. It's a fine addition to our public affairs broadcasting.
Thank you. And following me is Non-Human Radio and then Sue Hildebrand. We're going to put together a snappy little public affairs forward promo, man.
Our 5 to 7 p.m. slot on KZFR is really
solid.
Good. Very competitive with other public radio stations that do less original program than we do. Can I say that?
And I'll plug your show because you don't want Ecotopia rocks. First time I ever heard of Ecotopia, they were pretending they were potatoes on St. Patty's Day.
We did a potato show with recipes and political and social history as well. So it wasn't just fun and mashed potatoes.
All right, 895-0131. We have a bunch of great gifts to give out to our people that are pledging. And once again, I just want to thank our two candidates, one up for re-election, Tammy Ritter, and Carl Ory for throwing your hat back in the ring, and he actually has a hat on. We won't make him throw it in the ring, but you're listening to KZFR, People Powered Radio.
I got GP Bailey. He's going to tell us a story, man.
Yeah, about a year ago, my wife told me a story about a fellow they call Batman here, and he had just been rousing from his camp on the river, and he had his bike and his guitar, and just told her the story. He got caught living. Said, yeah, the ranger just caught me. What were you doing? Just living.
Just living.
I got caught living by the ranger. I wasn't causing anybody trouble.
I wasn't putting anyone in danger, but the ranger made me leave on the double. He said, you gotta go, and I'm telling you so. I said that you know there's nowhere to go. He said that it wasn't his problem, man. I had to get away as fast as I can. You know, we pay these rangers, we pay the police to chase us away. We never get any peace. Every time we kick back, find somewhere to relax.